Good afternoon. This is Tamara reading the Rantoul Press for the week of August 19th. We'll start with some local news. Food distribution set August 29th at CSC. Food distribution will be held from 9 to 10:30 a.m. Saturday, August 29th at Community Service Center. The distribution is for income-eligible residents of Champaign County. Bring an ID with current address. One recipient per household is allowed. The distribution will take place outside. Everyone must wear a mask or they will not be served. The distribution is sponsored by Christian Life Church of Rantoul. The center is located at 520 East Wabash Avenue. School support program started from Rantoul. With school starting this week, Rantoul Rec officials knew there were needs to be met. Rantoul City school students don't go to school every day. Some don't go at all due to remote learning. They need help with their studies, and parents need help with childcare. That's where the Rec Department's school support program comes in. It used to be when kids got out at 2 or 3 and they would show up at the youth center, they could play and intermingle with other kids and have a great time, Youth Director Andy Graham said. It was a safe place for kids to be. Now with kids getting out at 12:30, we had to adjust how we did things for our kids. Many might not be able to get all of their homework done. Working parents also have child care to consider. To cover costs, the rec department will charge an initial fee of $60 for the first 2 weeks, then $30 a week. Meals will be served every Monday. 2 to 3 staff members will be on hand to help students. We're not trying to break the bank on anybody, Graham said. We're trying to keep it as cheap as we can. We will work with people if they need different pay structures. The program started Monday. Graham said everyone is learning as they go. It's different in the sense we've never done something quite like this, he said. We had more of a drop-in center in the past, but now sign-ups are needed to keep track of who will be attending. As in the past, retired RCS teacher Margaret Carter will be assisting with the teaching. She has already said she will be out there, Graham said, but probably not until after Labor Day. She has always been an avid supporter of what we do. Summer Meal Program. The rec department recently finished its summer meal program. About 6,500 hot meals were served. It was a complete home summer lunch program with a different meal every day. The program was funded by an Illinois Department of Education grant, with meals free to everyone. From 120 to 125 meals were served a day. Dan, the sweet corn man, enjoys the interaction. Every morning these days, 74-year-old Dan Brown hauls himself out of bed at 5 a.m. to head over to a field outside of Hoopston that his son owns to pick sweet corn with his family. It's a fitting location for the work, as Hoopston is known as the home of the corn jerkers. The sweet corn picked, Brown points his vehicle southwest for the 45-minute drive to Rantoul, where he is a popular guy, as he sets up his stand on U.S. 136 near Rantoul Township High School. Frequently, there's a line of people waiting to buy some ears from Brown. Other family members head different directions to sell the corn, one to Tilton, another to Attica, Indiana, a third in Hoopston. A retired farmer, Brown said his son Toby now is in charge of the farming operation that includes a 25-acre plot of sweet corn. It's a family deal with him and his wife and their kids and husbands and some grandkids, Dan Brown said of his son's enterprise. They let me drive the tractor. Corn picking lasts until about 8 a.m. It's all picked by hand, just like in the days before mechanized farm equipment. Then everyone heads to the barn lot and loads up the sweet corn for the different stands. Brown generally sells out about 12:30 or 1, but one day last week he had an extra load and didn't run out until about 4 p.m. That's when he discovered his vehicle had a flat tire, so he had to take care of that after packing up to head back to the town that used to be famous for its corn processing plants. The stand is generally open 6 days a week, closed on Sundays. While stationed in Alaska in the Air Force in 1968, Brown lost a leg when he was struck by a car that skidded on the ice. He said he never let losing the limb get him down and tries to encourage others who have had similar mishaps. Occasionally, he will wear shorts, and customers see his artificial leg. Brown has been coming to Rantoul to sell corn for the last 13 years. Sweet corn is generally ready the second week in July, but it was behind this year due to bad weather. "It's sort of a weird year at the beginning of it," he said. "We had that cold, cold weather in the spring. It didn't come up, and when it did, it was uneven." "It's producing real good," Brown said. "People just love it. We call it football corn. Just the shape of it. It's a melt-in-your-mouth sweet corn." He'll continue to sell corn until September. Brown said he was talked into being part of the corn operation after a "Hey, Dad" moment. His son approached him one day and said, "Hey, Dad, what are you doing?" And he asked him if he wanted to help. Brown enjoys it, though he doesn't particularly like getting up at 5 a.m. The corn operation keeps him busy, and he gets to socialize within reason when so many can't do so. He enjoys the people. "People here in Rantoul are fantastic as far as customers," he said. "It's a big enough town to have new customers, but small enough to have a network. People are friendly. We have been having lines of people waiting to buy. The demand is really up. I apologize to them that it's taking so long, but they don't mind. They're standing in line and talking to each other, and I hear them laughing. I've got a whole lot of friends, but I don't know their names." Brown said many sellers say their corn is picked this morning. He said that's definitely the case with his corn. It's picked just a few hours before he sells it. "We're the only corn jerkers left," he said. "That's what we do every morning." Sports complex bids receive narrow okay. The village board narrowly approved awarding contracts to two companies to provide lighting at the under-construction Rantoul Family Sports Complex. Mayor Chuck Smith broke 3-3 ties on the two contract proposals, one for Cooper Lighting Solutions for sport and parking lot lighting at a cost of $1.775 million, and two for Oberlander Electric for electric installation at a cost of $1.046 million. On another controversial issue at last week's board meeting, the board failed to make a motion on a proposal to restrict the use of all-terrain vehicles on private property within the village. On the lighting issue, Barton Electric owner Jerry Barton complained because his firm did not get the contract to provide the lighting. "We bid on the project in late July and found out we were the low bidder by almost $200,000," Barton said. "Then we found out the project was over budget, so we took the opportunity to submit a change, which he said would have resulted in $1 million in savings. He said his company attempted to learn the status of the project throughout July, but could get no feedback until he watched the video of the board's August 4th study session, when it was said that none of his bids met specifications. "I dispute that a lot," Barton said. "We met the specifications." Barton claimed his bid was lower than that provided by Cooper Lighting. He asked the board to table awarding of the bid until we can get this straightened out. Barton made claims the process was not legitimate. Village Administrator Scott Eisenhower disputed those claims, saying the investigation of what the sports complex needed took months of research. And that's exactly why, when Byrne and Jones put out the bid, they put out the bid for a specified package, Eisenhower said, adding that Barton submitted no plan for an Ephesus lighting package. Rather, he submitted a $1.9 million bid for a Musco lighting package on July 7th. "To stand here this evening and suggest they're saving you $75,000 only comes about because they knew what the Ephesus bid number was, and now they're undercutting that bid," added Eisenhower. "If that's a process we're going to operate under, then I'm going to warn you that that will cost us bidding opportunities in the future." Recreation Director Luke Humphrey said he did his research, and I think we're bringing the best product forward that fits within our budget. Trustee Gary Wilson said he spoke the day of the meeting with a Champaign Park district official about the district's lighting system. He said the district has a Musco system, as does the University of Illinois, and a sports complex in O'Fallon. Wilson said something didn't feel right. Eisenhower responded, "It also doesn't feel right that on July 7, 2020, the Musco lighting equipment bid was $1.9 million. Now they're standing before you and suggesting otherwise." Trustee Hank Gammel said he felt, since there were charges of favoritism made by Barton, that trustees needed to discuss the matter further at another meeting. "Something has been said that requires a little more inquiry in my mind," Gammel said. In the 4-3 votes to approve the recommendations, Wilson, Gammel, and Sherry Johnson voted no, while trustees Sam Hall, Mark Wilkerson, and Terry Workman voted yes, with Smith breaking the ties. ATV proposal fails. A potential proposal that would have further restricted all-terrain vehicle use in the community died for lack of a motion. Police Chief Tony Brown had presented the proposal following residents' complaints about noise. The proposed ordinance would have made it unlawful to operate an ATV on private property in a residentially zoned area within the village at any time. ATVs were already illegal on streets and other public property, except for municipally owned or operated ATVs for official purposes. ATVs participating in community parades are bona fide public activities or events, and being used for on-site business operations for legitimate business purposes. During public comments, Pete Haynes objected to the proposal. "So you're telling me there's nowhere in town you can run an ATV, including on my own property?" Haynes asked the board, "There's laws that say you can't ride on the street. There are noise ordinances that say we can't make noise from 9 p.m. to 7 a.m., so enforce that. Leave me alone. Let me have my property to do what I want to do. I'm an American citizen, and I fought for that right. So did many of you." Haynes said rather than the village indicating where ATVs can't be ridden, it should say where they can be. When Smith asked trustees if anyone wanted to make a motion to approve the proposed ordinance, no one responded. Two more selected to Human Relations Committee. The board approved Smith's selection of Wendy Hundley and Char Mitchell to serve on the Human Relations Committee. A 20-year resident of Rantoul, Hundley brings a vast amount of experience in the government sector to the position, Smith said. She serves as the deputy city clerk in Urbana. Smith said he has asked Hundley to serve as the first chairman of the committee because of her experience and knowledge of the Open Meetings Act. He said all committee members will be required to obtain Open Meetings Act training. Mitchell works in the Business Administrative Division of Card Services at the University of Illinois. Smith said one of her main attributes is her past experience as a community organizer with Neighborhood Partners of Kankakee. She was active with the group from August 1997 until August 2002. Said Smith, "She will be able to contribute to the overall mission of serving this community and implementing a course of action to involve or assist our residents with positive results." The committee includes 3 women and 4 men. Smith said he interviewed 6 people for the remaining 2 vacancies on the committee and called it a refreshing and exciting experience. Smith previously named Sherry Faulkner, Herm Fogel, Kelly Foster, Tony Payton, and John Vasquez Jr. to the panel. The committee is designed to reduce prejudice and discrimination in the community based on race, religion, national origin, cultural background, sex, sexual orientation, age, disability, and other factors. In other business, the board also voted to authorize and approve a contract with Wells & Wells Construction for a building package totaling $2.609 million that includes construction of 3 buildings at the sports complex, including the main building that will include, among other things, administrative office space, full-serve commercial kitchen and concession, conference room, hospitality room, and buildings 2 and 3 that will be considered hospitality areas that will contain concessions, restrooms and officials' hospitality room, and scorekeeping media viewing area on the second floor. Estimated completion date is February 2nd. To approve the purchase of concession equipment for the sports complex from ServU for $122,364. To authorize and approve general contractor Byrne & Jones to coordinate with Cross Construction on concrete and asphalt surfaces at the sports complex for $2.115 million. To authorize and approve Byrne & Jones to contract with SK Fence to coordinate all fencing at the sports complex for $755,539. Race, downtown, face mask issues raised to village board. More complaints about village hiring practices. Racism, downtown Rantoul, and the condition of downtown were on the minds of several speakers during the public comments section of last week's village board meeting. In order of their appearance, Deborah Sweat alluded to previous complaints about the lack of minorities hired by the village, referred to a comment made during district meetings on how nepotism, friendships, and personal networking are factors in hiring. Unless changes in hiring procedures are made, it will continue, Sweat said. It's not reflective of being an equal opportunity employer. Turning to downtown, Sweat said the covering of a downtown business facade is now showing a big gaping hole and is a further hazard. She asks who owns the building and whether the village is taking action. Sweat said she appreciated the village taking off the board agenda a proposal to increase the salaries of several officials, saying increases were not appropriate at this time. Rantoul is a town of low to moderate income individuals, she said, adding she believes any compensation increase should be the task for the new board that will be seated next year. Sweat said the village administrator webpage reflects the 2018-19 budget and asked where the links are to the current budgets. She said in March 2017, former village administrator Jeff Feigenshue prepared an annual report for the mayor and trustees. She asked if it is not a requirement for current village administrator Scott Eisenhower. She said she would like to see the report included. Sweat said she and others would like to know updated costs of the sports complex and asked if it can be provided at the September meeting. She said Eisenhower's comments that people serving on the village board have to do a lot of work and the job is not just another paycheck were flippant and insulting. Was that based on current experience or from Danville? Sweat asked. Sweat asked why there have been frequent power outages in the community. Why can't we have reliable, robust service? Sweat said. In July, my power went out 3 times in as many weeks, and said she heard it also went out in other areas of town. I understand we're rural, and we have squirrels and other problems. Tracy Williams said in mid-July, the Rantoul Reformed Group came before the board and asked trustees to make a commitment to achieve racial equality in the community. She said the group also discussed the matter with school boards. This last month, I am just astounded where we need racial equity, Williams said. In the schools, there is zero administration that are black. There are no black teachers in high school, very few in RCS. She said of the village of Rantoul's 135 employees, only 8 are black. There's really a problem here, Williams said. She said the village needs to make a commitment to rectifying the disparity and develop a plan to hire more minorities and not use the same old good old boy network. Doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results is the definition of insanity, Williams said. She said there is a question of how some employees can advance in their jobs. Williams also said there is not a clear path for home ownership by minorities. She said in the Community Development Block Grant Guidelines, it states village staff will meet with mortgage lenders to develop affordable home ownership programs. But every time she is asked about the program, she is told it no longer exists or that's got nothing to do with us. She asked the village to submit a clear plan for racial equity in the community. Louise Haynes said she believes that some with the village of Rantoul forgot who you work for. The people elected you. The people pay you with our taxes, she said. Going back to 2013, how are the streets doing? How is flooding doing? How are buildings falling down full of mold? That's a health risk. How about our bank building, Hallmark building, theater building, the building next to ET's? The houses you bought on Illinois Drive are full of mold and are a health risk on base. We can't even get a street named after the Tuskegee Airmen. Haynes said she understands there is a committee formed that is trying to name buildings on the former Chanute Air Force Base after prominent Rantoul residents. I keep asking about these buildings and I'm told it's private property, she said, adding it's time for the village to take scofflaws to court. She said the board doesn't make the cut and change is needed. Yes, you're getting the sports complex, Haynes said. That's going to cost a lot of money. When is it going to trickle down? Haynes thanked the fire department for the new fire truck and police chief Tony Brown for trying to get more diversity within the police department. And thanks to Luke Humphrey for the nice park we got. And I'm told I'm getting a dock out at Heritage Lake. Chris Powers commented on Trustee Mark Wilkerson's refusal to wear a face mask at village meetings. The mayor and 5 board members are wearing facial coverings because, as we're all aware, a global pandemic rages outside these walls and perhaps within, Powers said. 163,000 Americans have died so far. To put that in perspective, we can fill the State Farm Center 10.5 times with the bodies of our fellow Americans. He said hundreds of thousands of Americans have been hospitalized, and many will suffer debilitating health problems for months afterward, after supposedly recovering. In the absence of a vaccine, the path is clear. We must contain this scourge and save lives, Power said. He said people are not defenseless against COVID-19 if they will practice social distancing, wash their hands often, and wear facial masks. Powers quoted Dr. Robert R. Redfield, director of the Centers for Disease Control, who said cloth face coverings are one of the most powerful weapons we have to slow and stop the spread of virus, particularly used universally within a community setting. He said Wilkerson, instead of modeling good behavior for a public that is weary of restrictions and recommendations, has chosen to protest against science and government in a way that endangers everyone in this room. Wilkerson said he doesn't wear the masks while sitting in a chair away from everyone. He said it is medically intolerable for him to wear a mask, and said he wears one when he feels it's appropriate. Wilkerson said with panels around him and no one in front of him, he didn't feel like he needed to wear a mask at the meetings. Powers quoted Wilkerson's tweet responding to Governor J.B. Pritzker. Wilkerson, Powers said, wrote that science is emphatic, that the masks do not promote good health, just the opposite, and that the negatives outweigh any preconceived positives. You don't believe in masks, Powers said. You don't believe in the science. Powers said Wilkerson was subjecting everyone in the village boardroom to risk, and everyone has to assume they are infected because virus symptoms don't show up until days later. There are no death notices for this week, so we will continue with local news and commentary. Life remembered. Late Gifford teen could put a smile on your face. From Gifford. If you needed a laugh or someone to lift your spirits, Matthew Carell was a good person to be around. That's how several people remember the 18-year-old Gifford resident. He was energetic, always making jokes, happy. He could make friends anywhere he went, said Danielle Birch, who got to know Mr. Carell as his swim teach coach and boss at Hap Parker Family Aquatic Center, where he was a lifeguard. Marshall Horton called his late friend one of the funniest people I knew. He always just seemed so sure of himself, very happy, very fun to be around. Mr. Carell, who was on a bicycle, died from injuries he received Saturday night when he was hit by a car on U.S. 136, just east of Gifford. A 15-year-old Gifford resident was also struck and sustained non-life-threatening injuries. Andy Graham, Assistant Rantoul Recreation Department Director, remembers Mr. Carell as a good kid. He was from a real good family. His parents, Brian M. and Kelly Four Carell, and his younger brother, Micah, are among his survivors. The Reverend Mark Wilkerson, pastor of the Carell's Family Church, Maranatha Baptist in Rantoul, said he knew the 2020 graduate of Rantoul Township High School from church and when he used to hang around with Wilkerson's son. When he got into high school, they kind of went separate ways as far as interest and activities, Wilkerson said. I always had good interaction with him when he attended our church. Wilkerson is to officiate Mr. Carell's private funeral service. He said the night of the accident, Mr. Carell and the other bicyclists left their house at about 8:30 p.m., drove south of Gifford, then east and back north. Instead of going across U.S. 136 like they frequently did, they took a left, driving west toward Gifford when they were struck by the vehicle. It was pretty tragic, Wilkerson said. He had loving parents. He professed faith as a young man. Wilkerson said Mr. Carell attended Calvary Baptist Christian Academy in Urbana. For his eighth grade year, he transferred to Gifford Grade School. He was a fun-loving kid, Wilkerson said. He had a good sense of humor, fun to be around. Andrea Welty Peachy, Mr. Carell's choral and madrigal teacher at RTHS, said her charge had a knack for imitating voices and sounds. One day she handed out kazoos for the madrigals, and Mr. Carell produced the saxophone sound from the song Careless Whisper. It just blew me away, Welty Peachy said. He had a way of making voices and imitating people that was just so funny. He was very talented in that way. She said she didn't know Mr. Carell well because he was in chorus and madrigals for just 1 year, but noticed he had a way of cheering people up when they were down with his antics. I've heard from a few kids since his passing. This is really hard for them, Wilty Peachy said. Horton, who was a year younger than Mr. Carell, said he learned of his friend's death Saturday night when he received a text from a friend who asked if he had heard about the accident. It wasn't until later that he learned on Snapchat that Mr. Carell had died. Messages would say, "Rest in peace, Matthew," and I started to get worried. Birch said Mr. Carell was quite competitive and participated on the swim team for about 7 years. As a swimmer last year, he grew more and he liked swim team a lot more, Birch said. He was competitive driven. He was always trying to race others in his age group, even if they were on the same team. As a lifeguard, he was dependable. We could always count on him. He was always eager to help and do extra things, even when he wasn't told to. A drive-through visitation for Mr. Carell was scheduled 5 to 7 p.m. Friday at Lux Memorial Chapel, Rantoul. Following the private funeral service, burial will be in Hull's Cemetery, Gifford. From Scott Reeder in Springfield, "What would it have hurt just to do a little checking? If it can happen to Art Turner, it can happen to just about anyone. But it sure is a lot more likely to occur if you happen to be black. Last week, Turner, who was once the most powerful African-American in the Illinois House, was handcuffed and hauled to jail while driving just 2 blocks from his own Chicago home. His offense? Well, that's just it. He did nothing wrong. All the same, he ended up locked up in a jail cell, stripped of his shoes, belt, and more than a bit of his dignity. Here's what happened. The 69-year-old was driving his BMW to a car dealer to trade it in for a truck. Two Chicago officers pulled him over and said his car was missing a front license plate. He explained it had just fallen off and he hadn't bothered to put it back on because he was trading it in that day. But he produced his title, registration, driver's license, all the other pertinent paperwork. The police officers ran his driver's license and then said he was wanted for failure to appear in court on a traffic offense. Turner explained that they must be mistaken because he knew he wasn't wanted. He added, Art Turner is a common name. Could they double-check their information? They refused. He was then patted down, handcuffed, and loaded in the back of a patrol car. I kept telling the police officers that the handcuffs were on too tight, that they were really hurting my wrists. I explained to her that I represented the area for 30 years in the legislature when we drove by my old office. And I said I was certain that I wasn't wanted for anything. Could she double-check her information? The officer didn't respond. Authority and arrogance often go hand in hand, and let's be honest, some folks can't see past the color of a person's skin. For such individuals, reasoning, accomplishments, empathy mean little. From my time covering police departments, I can tell you a whole lot of bigots end up in law enforcement. And no, not all cops are this way, but enough are that fear of law enforcement is pervasive in black communities. In the wake of George Floyd's death in Minneapolis and Black Lives Matter demonstrations throughout the nation, one might think these officers would be extra careful in how they treat people. That apparently wasn't the case with the pair who Turner encountered. They could have requested more information on the wanted individual, but didn't. In case you're wondering about Representative Turner, he has a gentlemanly demeanor and stands a rather unimposing 5'8" tall. During his time in the legislature, Turner was known as quiet and cerebral. He wasn't a grandstander. He was a budget nerd. I started out in college as a math major and then switched to business. Working on the state budget just seemed like a good fit, he said. When handcuffed Turner arrived at the police station, he hollered that he was a former state representative and demanded to see the watch commander. A sergeant heard his voice echoing down the hallway and sought out the commander. The commander knew him and immediately released him. It turns out that there was an Art Turner who was wanted, but this Art Turner is 36 years younger than the former state representative. The fugitive is also covered with tattoos, and Art, the budget nerd, has none. Oh, and the wanted man is 6'2", 6 inches taller than the other Art Turner. If the former state representative wasn't a prominent person in the community, and if the watch commander hadn't known him, he might have well have spent a night or two in jail before the matter was cleared up. The commander apologized, but Turner said he never heard from the two officers who locked him up. Now, some reading this may say this isn't about race. Maybe the former state representative was dressed in a manner that caused suspicion. So, just what was he wearing? I had on a shirt that says Chicago Police Golf Memorial Fund. On the back of the shirt, it had the Chicago Police Star, and on the front, it had the flag colors of the Chicago Police. It's a charity I've supported over the years. Scott Reeder is a veteran statehouse journalist and a freelance reporter. You can reach him at scottreeder1965@gmail.com. This has been Tamara reading the Rantoul Press. I hope to read with you again soon. Have a great day.